Okay.
I don't need it. I'm not signed in. Sorry. I won't bore you guys. Go ahead.
Okay. Hello, and welcome to How Do You Feel, the show that is dedicated to your health and wellness and is sponsored by the Peoria City County Health Department. I am your host, Lorraine King, and today I am visiting with Dr. William Bond, who is the Director of Simulation Research and Emergency Physician. Is that correct, Dr. Bond?
Correct. Thank you.
And also with Michelle Compton, who is the Child and Family Health Program Coordinator. And guess what? She's a nutritionist.
That is correct. Thank you.
Okay, now today they're here to talk about cannabis and maternal health. And in my mind, I haven't put those two together. So who wants to tell the listening audience, or, you know, why we're talking about those two things together?
Did you want to...
Sure, I'm happy to. So, as Lorraine said, my name is Michelle Compton, and I am the WIC coordinator at Peoria City County Health Department.
Oh, she didn't tell me she did WIC, too.
Well, it's tricky with the title, but Child and Family Health Program Coordinator, and one of those programs is WIC.
Okay.
So we are very focused on the health of women during their pregnancy, and then that person postpartum, as well as the infant from even before birth, while during pregnancy. So we look at all aspects of health, although our program is really nutrition-focused. We look at that individual as a whole in all aspects of health. And one of the rising questions that we often get from participants is, what about cannabis use? Now that it's legal, is this okay? So we are always trying to do our research and provide people with the most up-to-date information.
So that's how it came about. Have you seen any cases where cannabis has impacted the woman's health? So there's obvious evidence, empirical evidence, that it's impacted it in some kind of way?
So I think the challenge with cannabis and maternal health when it comes to the unborn child is that it takes a long time to see the outcome, right? So the baby has to be born, then would have to be tracked in studies for a number of years to know the impact that marijuana or cannabis products would have on a baby when the baby is developing. We know that it does cross over, and it is associated with lower birth weights. Mm. And, so there are significant concerns as associated with admissions into the neonatal intensive care unit. So we have some evidence that there's associations, but saying that A causes B is always tough because you have to have that direct causal link. And it's that, well, if someone's using cannabis, they might also have smoked regular cigarettes, right? And so it's sometimes tough to tease out what the effect was exactly from. But we know that it is associated with the things that we worry about as physicians and folks who care for people in the community.
So are you tracking that now?
So I think there needs to be a lot more research, frankly. What I'm working on right now with some research at the University of Illinois in Chicago is trying to develop messaging to try and get the word out that there are risks, that we are concerned, and particularly in women who are in the process of having babies. So because of those concerns that have been voiced by the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, there's stuff up on the CDC website that talks about the risks to mothers during pregnancy and to the unborn children. And so because of that, we're trying to get the word out. And so we're creating different media objects and figuring out, asking people who would receive that message, does this message make any sense to you?
So for the information they're putting on the website, what kinds of risk are they naming?
So they're talking about, intellectual development problems, neurocognitive development. And that's the real worry, Lorraine, is that really, our ability to learn new things has a lot to do with our ability to succeed in the world. And so, and any disadvantage you start out with early in life can stick with you. And so, we want our pregnant mothers to be, eating very nutritious food in safe environments, right? And having those babies develop really into healthy folks, because their intellectual capacity is our future, right? They're the people who are going to solve our future problems and care for us as we get older, and right, so super important that we have healthy babies.
So you're doing research to get more information, and then you're following up with nutrition to counteract it, or how does yours tie in with what he's doing?
Yeah, so we, from a community perspective, so at WIC and at the health department, we are there to be a resource. So we don't have all of the answers. I'm not the one doing the research, and I don't have a medical background. But as a dietitian, as a certified lactation counselor, I am there to answer questions and point people in the right direction. So that if people come to me with, is this safe? Is this healthy? I can let them know that there are possible risks associated and that you need to make a decision with your medical provider.
Now, do they initiate the conversation about the cannabis, or do you have some kind of questionnaire where you ask them and then they admit to it and you talk about it?
So we do ask certain questions as part of WIC. Your visit involves a nutrition assessment. So anything that could affect your nutrition status, and that could be alcohol, any type of drug usage, whether illegal or illegal. We're not there to get anyone in trouble or report anyone for something. We're solely there to help connect them with resources. So if somebody isn't sure, if, you know, I think one of the big things with cannabis becoming legal, sometimes people think legal equals safe, and that's not the case. You know,
we just like alcohol.
Exactly. So alcohol's legal, but is that recommended during pregnancy?
No.
So we're just there to be a listening ear. So WIC is a very judgment-free zone. It is a safe space to discuss things. So I feel that we really have a very good relationship between our nutritionist and our WIC staff and our clients, so that they can open up and let us know, you know, what is going on.
So how long have you two been looking at this situation?
Well, we're working in two separate you know, work streams, but and recently got connected through this interview. You know, we started our work last year, and you know, I would add to the comment that Michelle made about the other messages out there is that because it's natural, it's safe, right? And
there's arsenic is natural.
Right? And I think that there's many things in nature that are dangerous to us, right? Arsenic is naturally occurring, and you wouldn't go out and take that. And so, and there are things that in nature that are safe in small amounts, but not safe in highly concentrated amounts. And we know that many of the marijuana products and cannabis products are very highly concentrated these days, right? This is not as it was, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago. This is very strong stuff. And so that level of concentration could be even more impactful to babies. So
so whatever the mom is ingesting may not be that harmful to her. But if she's pregnant or a potential mom, it could be seriously grave to the infant.
Right, that's what we're worried about, is that you know, you could be hurting the development of the child. Babies are very sensitive to small amounts of toxins in the environment and, you know, chemicals and things. And so we want to give that baby the best chance to develop healthy.
So, now, you're also an emergency physician, so how did you get involved in this research? Did you have people come into the emergency room that were impacted by cannabis?
Yeah, it's a good question. With the legalization of cannabis products, we have certainly seen an uptick in use. And so very routine in my practice to sort of, you know, smell it as I, you know, come into patients' rooms and know that it's a factor, or I ask about it and it's a factor. I often see young people who have reduced the amount of product that they've taken in, and they start to get a withdrawal syndrome. So they start to have vomiting because they didn't have their usual amount of cannabis products. And so clearly that's having a pretty profound impact when an 18-year-old healthy kid is in your emergency department because of withdrawing from the product. So that's how I got engaged, is that I was very concerned about our youth, very concerned about our mothers and their babies, and, you know, and then got connected to some folks through a grant opportunity, and we wrote the grant together.
So. Well, I was going to ask you if you were able to partner with anybody else who might be studying the same thing.
Right. So the folks in, you know, Robin Murmelstein in Chicago, she and her team have been studying issues like tobacco addiction for years. So they're Department of Psychology researchers We have Aaron Behrens and Myra Guerrero are also on the team. These are wonderful, talented psychology folks. And these women came together with me and we wrote this grant. So we're excited to figure out. It's really a first step is, you know, what messaging might people respond to and what resonates with them. And then can we put it out there and see if it makes an impact? And so that's the next phase.
So are you recruiting subjects for this research? And is Michelle feeding you any subjects that you can include in your research project?
Another good question. We just got the Institutional Review Board approval. You have to get ethical approval before you do any research. So we're now at the point where we can develop our recruiting materials and get the word out there to people. So more to come very soon as we have those materials together. We're definitely recruiting some from the Chicago market. And so, and I will reach out to recruit more in the Peoria area as well.
So you haven't recruited people here yet?
Right. We're just at the point where we're about
to. But you're getting ready to start because of the grant. Mm-hmm. And how long is the grant for?
It's a year-long grant.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So then at the end of that time frame, what do you hope to have accomplished or achieved?
So we hope to have some concept of what media sources our people use, you know, what's the best way to reach them, some media objects that would be things that we could then use in the next phase of study. And so, and even the team development is in itself, I think, an accomplishment. And so we'll be able to write about those accomplishments, and then we'll have tools that we can use for the next phase. So.
Oh, so then you can maybe get another grant to do some additional study.
Right, and the hope is to be able to eventually spread those messages nationally, that something we developed locally here in Illinois could be spread nationally.
So. Yeah, we are like the downstate mayor. Okay, so you're going to be doing this study, and when is the kickoff? Like, when do you, like, formally?
I don't have an exact date. I think within the next 30 to 60 days we'll be recruiting.
Okay. And then while he's waiting to get everything set up for the study, and then, Michelle, what are you doing on your end?
We're just continuing with WIC services. So we are here to serve anybody during their pregnancy, postpartum, up through a year postpartum if they're breastfeeding, 6 months postpartum non-breastfeeding, and then children can stay on the WIC program up through age 5.
Okay. Now, if you've just joined us, you're listening to How Do You Feel? 106.3 on your FM dial. And I'm interviewing Dr. William Bond, who's an emergency physician and also the director of the simulation research, and Michelle Compton, who's a child and family health program coordinator. And they're both interested in getting more information about the impact of cannabis on maternal health. So for moms who might already have been on cannabis before they got pregnant, do you give them some kind of counsel as to, like, now that you're expecting, you might want to reevaluate or reassess, you know, your intake?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So from a WIC perspective, if anybody mentions any type of substance that they are on during pregnancy and it would, you know, cause a red flag or a pink flag or anything that we would be a little, you know, skeptical on, we would direct them to talk with their medical provider. We know that everybody is individual in their needs, their medical history, reasons for things. So we would certainly direct them to talk to their medical provider and explain that there could be risks associated with that substance.
Okay. And then from your perspective, Dr. Bond, you were going to say something.
Well,
go ahead.
A follow-on point is part of what we're up against is that there actually was a study in Colorado where they did sort of a secret shopper model, and they called into marijuana dispensaries and they said, I'm a pregnant woman and I have nausea, which is common in early pregnancy. You know, should I be taking some of your products to help me with my nausea? And the answer in over 60% of cases, these dispensaries were saying, oh yes, we have products that will help you, come on in, which is scary to me, right? Is that they're recommending something that we don't know is safe. And it is a common symptom in pregnancy. And so it's really something that, you know, we encourage women to talk with their physician or, you know, someone who is a midwife or someone who is in the know about pregnancy symptoms on ways that you might mitigate those symptoms and feel better. So things that you might do just in terms of changing your diet, the time of day you're eating, what you're eating, And we do have some medications that we think are safer to try and treat nausea if we have to. At a certain point, if someone has really severe nausea, then we have to weigh the benefits of a dehydrated, you know, the risk of mom being dehydrated versus the risk of these medications. And so sometimes we have to give some medications and IV fluids to get a mom to feel better.
And the people who operate in these dispensaries are not licensed medical people,
right,
are they?
Right. And I do want to say there are legitimate medicinal uses for some of these products that have been shown in studies to help in cases of cancer care and certain palliative care situations. There's a sort of a limited list that has been studied, but there have been studies that have shown some benefits. So to be clear, I don't want to send a message that all is bad. It's just like anything, the situation, the dose.
Right, but those benefits have been for adults, right?
Correct, not for
children.
Adults, right.
So for the people that you have encountered who might be using cannabis or whatever, and you mentioned that precaution, how do they respond to that?
I think it would depend on the individual. I mean, some people might have that thought already, and that's why they're asking, or that's why they're bringing up the conversation. And then others could be surprised, and I think, you know, we hit on earlier, people thinking, well, it's legalized now, so doesn't that mean that it's safe? Or, again, it's natural, doesn't that mean that it's safe? So we have some people that are more surprised and some that kind of have a suspicion and feel like they need some guidance or support. Or there's people that have said, I would like to cut back, and I've been trying to do that. Then absolutely let us connect you with some resources that can help you with that.
So would Dr. Bond be one of those resources if they were trying to cut back?
It's probably more of a counselor, you know, a drug and alcohol abuse counselor would help with that. Because there are folks who are taking these products enough that it really is, you know, an addiction problem. Different than maybe the, you know, once a month or something type of user. So I think these are the questions that we're wrestling with right now, is how to get the message out. In the end, whether it's cigarettes, alcohol, we have to find ways to help you find your own motivation, right? It's really you, the individual, has to find that motivation to stop using it. And we're hoping that motivation in part is you want yourself to have the healthiest baby you can, right?
You want
your baby to be healthy and give that baby the best chance you can early in life. And so that, to me, would certainly be strong motivation. But in the end, we want to see what motivates people and get them to find their motivations and help them stay connected to those motivations.
Wow. So when you talk to people, Michelle, and when you talk to people, do you ask them about the how they get their information so that you can tailor your strategy in this grant to disseminate information that way?
That's part of the reason for the grant, is to ask that exact question.
Okay.
Is where do you get your information? Who do you trust for your information? You know, what sources, what are the easy electronic sources that you go to in your life? These days, I mean, many of us, it's the phone first, right? Is that that's what's with us when we're sitting waiting for our car at the oil change and looking for, we have that moment to look for information on a topic. And if we can't get to it through our mobile device, chances are, you know, it's going to be harder for us to get to some other source of information. So I think, but we need to hear that from the folks who are most impacted, right? I think, and I don't know, maybe those around the table can say, you know, how do you get your information? I think that's very different depending on your generation and what you trust as information sources. So.
Yeah, that's an excellent question, Lorraine, because that's something on multiple issues. So like nutrition, for example, if somebody says, well, I thought this was healthy because I saw somebody post about this. So then it's that conversation of where did the information come from? Is it somebody's opinion? Is it from the CDC? Is it from the World Health Organization? Is it based on a study of multiple people, or is it a study of four people and all of those people were in California? Just really kind of getting people to consider where their source of information is coming from, particularly when it has such a big impact on their health.
So you want to caution them that different genders can respond differently? There could be differences in the age range of how they respond? Do you find that difference too? Like, you know, there might be individuals that might not have any adverse effects before we even include the children in the equation. And so if somebody like me in their 70s decided out of the clear blue sky to start using it, like, how would I respond? How would that impact me?
Well, I can definitely let Dr. Bond touch on that. I just know every individual is different. So it could be two females, both age 25, both the same exact weight, and they could have very different effects.
So that's where you have to let them know. Just because so-and-so didn't have an adverse reaction, it doesn't mean that it won't impact you differently. Is that
right? I mean, it's the individual reacting differently. It can be very different products. You know, if we go to two different dispensaries on two different days, we can get something that's very different and in strength and the nature of the product. And these aren't, you know, necessarily something that's coming from a pharmaceutical grade of an exact chemical. It's the blend of chemicals that's in something that they've sort of distilled down to sell to you. So I think some of the subtleties you were getting at is, you know, we're targeting women 21 to 40. You know, granted, you know, many women are pregnant at a younger age, but that's a harder audience to study from a research perspective because of consent issues. So we went with a little bit older audience in part to make the research project be able to recruit, you know, fast and safely. But at a certain point, I think in future work, we would want to reach a younger female audience to see, you know, how do they feel about it? Because they're, you know, if you look at the studies of how, you know, I mean, cannabis uptake is in eighth grade, ninth grade, right? It's a very young age at which people are being exposed to these products. And so, you know, I think the information has to get out there very early and get out to parents, people, parents as well. So.
Wow. So for those who are listening, if they had questions and they know that you're non-judgmental and that you have their best interests at heart and it's confidential, how would they contact either one of you if they wanted to, A, be a part of the study, or if they wanted to get more information about their child because they're, you know, in the WIC program? So would they call you for the nutrition and call him to be in the study?
Yes, if somebody was interested in being a part of the WIC program, so just a brief recap, with WIC, it is an income-based program, so you do have to be income eligible. Okay. If you receive a state medical card or link at any amount, you're automatically WIC eligible. That's a quick way to tell, but you can also bring in paycheck stubs even if you're not on one of those programs.
So how would they contact you?
309-679-6096. And anybody who is pregnant or has a child under age 5.
Okay. So they can contact you and talk confidentially and openly about that.
Yes, absolutely.
And then if they want to be a part of your research project,
Mark Bond. We are building the recruiting materials as we speak. And I think it is going to be you know, a link that's shared with people via, you know, text messages and emails will be how that they sign up to become part of the study and then become part of a Zoom focus group is how we plan to conduct the work. It makes it easy to reach people. They don't have to travel into a research center. And certainly during the pandemic, it was easier to do that type of work. For now, I think it would be safe to reach me at 309-308-9543, and then I'd have to, you know, get back to them with the
yeah, because it might not start for 1 or 2 months.
Right,
yet.
It's a little bit out in the future, and so so more to come as we get those materials IRB approved. Yeah.
So while you're waiting to assemble your curriculum and get those documents approved, then what cautions would both of you have for women that may find themselves in that position, or for families, because there might be a father listening or a mother or a grandmother or an aunt or an uncle listen. So what advice would you have for people, you know, until you have some concrete evidence? So what would you say to them?
One of the things I would ask that person, like, to consider their reasons for using. Is it just recreational? Is it something I can easily say, let me put a pause on this until after I have this healthy baby and I'm finished breastfeeding and so forth. But the other thing I would like to just put out there is please consider secondhand exposure, because Dr. Bond talked about being able to smell it sometimes. if a baby is in the backseat of a car and people are using cannabis in the car, mm-hmm. that baby is breathing all of that in. So whether it's a car, in a household, on clothing, please be mindful of secondhand exposure, because that itself can be harmful to the infant.
And then does it linger? You know how when people smoke indoors and it lingers and it gets into the carpet and the draperies, is it the same thing with cannabis? Does it work the same way?
I don't know that that smell is dangerous to people, but it certainly does happen that the smell does, you know, get into our clothing and things. And, you know, and certainly, you know, something to consider. But I think I would second, you know, what Michelle is saying, which is, you know, we believe that that it does reach the unborn baby when someone's taking the products, that it reaches the unborn baby, and we don't have great long-term studies. We know there are risks, there are associations with smaller gestational weight babies and winding up in the neonatal intensive care unit. And these are certainly outcomes that worry us, because then that has them at risk for cognitive development mm-hmm. issues, you know, as things go forward. And so really, again, we want people to have the give that baby the best chance to have, you know, a healthy start. And that's, you know, that's why we're here today, is sort of pass that message along as best we can.
Okay. Now, are you going, in your study, are you going to be addressing what if there are pets in the household? In a household that uses cannabis, does that impact them, cause a change in their behavior? I mean,
I don't have a medical background. I'm a registered dietitian, lactation counselor. But I have heard that it can, especially if people think it's fun or it's funny to, like, blow smoke in a pet's face. Mm. Not at all. Incredibly dangerous for your pet. Mm. I'm not a vet, and I'm not a medical doctor, but
you are a health practitioner.
Yes, and I do have dogs, and I love dogs very much. So that would worry me very much. So I would recommend avoiding at least strong secondhand smoke for pets as well.
Okay, now what else would you like to tell our audience that I didn't ask? You know, before we leave, what would you have to say, Michelle?
Well, one of the things we didn't touch on a lot, and we don't need to, but breastfeeding. So we are talking about maternal health. So mm-hmm. that's pregnancy and beyond. So if a person is breastfeeding and currently using cannabis, or considering maybe they stopped cannabis during pregnancy and they're like, well, now that I'm breastfeeding and I'm not pregnant anymore, is it okay for me to use? Again, I would highly suggest that they consider the reason that they feel that they need or want to use cannabis again, and really think about those risks and those benefits, because mm-hmm. again, we don't know enough. We haven't had the amount of studies, so there certainly could be a potential risk even after you've had the baby while you're breastfeeding.
So they should exercise a lot of caution mm-hmm. because the unknown could wind up being very serious.
Yes.
In a bad way.
Yes.
Right. I mean, I think the risks too extend to anything that decreases your level of alertness while you're caring for a young child, right? You know, you look away for a minute and a young child gets injured, right? We see these cases, sadly, in the emergency department. And so just as alcohol could impair your ability to be, you know, safely watching a child, I think mm-hmm. the same is true for cannabis products, is that, you know, you really, you know, when you're being responsible for that young child, you're responsible. I think too, it is, you know, if the cannabis use is higher, and, you know, I don't know the exact numbers, if it is higher in sort of a disenfranchised population, if that then impacts a child, an unborn child, that is now adding to inequity, right? It's making that child have a disadvantage early in life as they're trying to learn everything from the ABCs on up. And so it does become, I think, a long-term generational equity issue, that people are able to develop in a healthy way, right? And learn the things they need to learn to be, you know, healthy, productive members of society. That's really what we want to see. So
it's going to impact the lifestyle of the family too, because if the child has all these adverse things happen to them because of the cannabis congestion, then that means the parent's going to have to get care for them for that.
Could, yeah, yeah.
Medical care, like you said, maybe psychological care, mm-hmm. child development things, all kind of. So the bottom line is, until you get the information that you're trying to compile and assess, that they should.
Right. I mean, I think a pretty clear message on my end that I do not think it's safe in pregnancy. I would really strongly recommend against that. And I think, you know, others have come out, and so I'm not going to mince words on that. Mm-hmm. And I think, again, there are other, you know, proven medicinal uses in different populations, mm-hmm. but in pregnant mothers, no. And I think...
And so there's no way, Michelle, that you would work that into your nutritional plan. No.
That would not be part of our nutritional plan.
Okay. Well, I certainly feel enlightened, although I'm not childbearing age. And I hope that the people who are listening, you know, exercise caution, like you say, when they think about the outcome, the long-term risk for their child and for the family as a whole, because there might be other children involved. Mm-hmm. And then the spouse, you know, so it becomes a family affair.
Yeah.
You know, with that child. Gets impacted that way. So I want to thank you both for being with us today, and I really would like you to come back after you've done some study mm-hmm. and tell us what you found.
Okay.
That would be really amazing. And, you know, some follow-up, and then what you're going to do for the next phase.
It's been a privilege to come speak with you, and thank you for having us. And yeah, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, together. Because you're going to be working together, right?
Yes, okay. Yes. I would gladly come back.
Okay. Well, thanks to Dr. Baum and Michelle, who is a child and family health program coordinator, which also includes WIC, for being with us today. To our audience, you've been listening to How Do You Feel? The show that's dedicated to your health and your wellness and is sponsored by the Peoria City County Health Department. I just want to remind you that this show airs at 11 a.m. on Saturday. If you miss it on Saturday, it repeats at 7:30 p.m. on Sunday. And if you miss that, you should be able to go to the WPNV podcast page, wpnv.org, and look for podcasts and look for How Do You Feel at the WPNV website. Also, if you want to have more conversation with Michelle about nutrition and the WIC program, you can contact her at 309-679-6096. And if you are interested in being a part of Dr. Bond's research project, that's going to focus on the impact of cannabis on maternal health, you may reach him at 309-308-9543. And so I know you're not on the phone 24 hours a day, so they can leave a message, right? And then you'll get back to them.
Absolutely.
Correct. And just a caution, if you want to be in the study hasn't started yet. So you got to be patient, but don't give up. Because you could be on the cutting edge of something here in Central Illinois. You could be a part of the team that makes that happen by your participation. And I know you want a diverse group of people mm-hmm. so you can feed all that information and then you can compare what Colorado did and what Chicago's doing. It's like, but this is what Peoria did. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, this is the hard part. We'll have to move the mouse, which I can't see, and stop.